Should we go direct or indirect in entry cases? That will be the topic of one lecture at the GC November Symposium. In this podcast, I talk with two dentists about this question, which is always causing a lot of discussions. And they actually believe that direct dentistry is the future. If you don't believe it, you better listen to this podcast. Welcome to today's show. I'm here connected with Javier and Maciej. I think you both don't really need an introduction, but I'm really great that we are here on a Sunday night, guys.
Good evening.
Good evening. It's a pleasure to be here with you guys.
Javier, there will be a GC November symposium and you are planning a lecture together with Marlene Paul-Oymans. What will be the topic of the lecture?
Our topic for the GC symposium is about anterior restorations, direct versus indirect. And I think it's a nice topic to discuss and to have a debate and to have a nice chat about it, because there is a lot of possibilities, a lot of dimensions on it. So very interesting, I think. And we will try to bring some light to this. Of course, it's a limited time, but we will try our best to show all the considerations that we normally think about when we are facing this kind of anterior cases.
And Maciej, you're also known for anterior cases. You even wrote a whole book about it. So you will be moderating the whole symposium. But what are your thoughts when it comes to direct or indirect anterior restorations? What's usually your decision tree?
First of all, it's an honor for me to be at this symposium as a moderator and introducing great lecturers like you, like Javier, and all the guys which will be lecturing in November. This is a very demanding story, because if you make any error, it's immediately possible to notice in the future compared with the posteriors. Posteriors are, both anteriors and posteriors are connected to function. But anteriors are really more easily seen within the errors in the future. And I would say in the past, I was more connected to the indirect restorations and in the ceramic veneers, because it was easier to do when you have a great technician. But in the recent, I think, last eight years with the improvement in composite materials and also more predictable work that we do with the wax up, mock up technique and the silicon indexes and the layering technique and the great composite that we receive also from GC company. We received, for example, Essentia in the last years, which is amazing composite. And it's possible to make the composites really predictable. So it's a 50-50% that I choose between direct and indirect. But when I have young patients, I go into the direct restorations. When I have a single restorations, I go to the direct restorations. When I have asymmetrical restorations, right side or left side, I go to the direct restorations. But when I have very complex cases, I consider indirect restorations as well.
Is it the same with you, Javi?
Yeah, I agree. I think it's of course there are many factors that we need to consider when we are choosing direct and indirect. There is of course also not only the age. Of course, the age is a big factor for sure. I mean, we need to understand that the more we touch the tooth, the worse the prognosis on the long term will be. So, I always say something in my lectures and my courses that unfortunately, the only thing that we can be sure in dentistry is that everything we do is going to fail one day, right? So this is the reality. I mean, we need to start thinking a little bit of the failure pattern and what are we going to do considering the age of the patient and how many reinterventions this teeth will need. Because it's not the same to consider an elder patient as a young patient when you think about this prognosis on the long term. So that's why composite, I think, is of course the first line, you know, that you need to, the first therapy that you need to look for when it's a young patient, because you don't want to do more irreversible dentistry, more preps, more, you know, everything starts going into this cycle of death of the tooth, and that's it. So the younger you start, the worse future you have. But at the same time, there is all some other considerations, like the structure of the tooth and the compromise, the biomechanical compromise that you might have. Because sometimes, of course, you have patients that have a huge defect on the tooth, a big fracture, and then the whole stiffness of the residual tissue, it's compromised, and perhaps you need to use indirect restoration just because you need to recover a little bit of this structure with something a bit more stiff if you want to have a little bit better result in the future. Also, the probably one of the biggest inconveniences of the composite is that the part of the color match and the layering and all those needs to be trained, needs to be, you need to have some skills, you need to have some training, and not everybody is on to that really. So a lot of times people choose to go indirect just because they have this lack of training into, or they don't feel comfortable doing the composites. But fortunately, this is something we can always solve with training and with sharing, you know. Also, maybe just sending patient over to other specialists that can do this, maybe, because we also need to consider that, you know. Unfortunately, I think this is a big problem we have in dentistry, is that we tend to just think that, okay, we need to solve the case in one way or the other. But the reality is, if you know someone that is going to solve the case better than you in this way, because you maybe you say, okay, I don't do the composites well, so okay, then I go indirect. But if that means I need to be more aggressive or more, I don't think that's completely justified, you know, because we have a lot of professionals, and we should be able to send to a colleague that can do that composite, because that's the best for the patient. We need to prioritize also what is the best for the patient. So thinking about all these things together. Sometimes also the economic factor is critical, you know, because not everybody can afford to have treatments done by the technician, by the ceramist, you know, having a good ceramist, for example, doing a good feldspathic ceramic, maybe on a platinum foil or something like that. That's going to be a totally different story than doing some direct composite restorations, right? So there is really many factors. And one of the factors that we want to actually cover in the lecture is related to the longevity of these restorations and how they age and what's going to be the future. I think that MAGIC really talk about one point that is very, very special and very important in this, and is that we have a lot of articles and research, you know, that it's considering composite versus ceramics, but they normally are older composites and not done in the way that we do composites now, and the materials and the mechanical properties, the polishing, all these things are not exactly the same as we have now. So I think that we have much more advanced materials now that have less problems of staining, that they can be maintained much better looking after the years. So, you know, it is not as in the past, I will say. So composite nowadays ages much, much better than in the past. And eventually you can even see cases that in ceramic that they didn't age that well, you know. So this is the funny thing, is when you start looking at long-term cases, you might find cases that they look better with composites than with ceramics. Because after 10, 15 years, you can be surprised, you know, ceramic might not look so good anymore. Huh? Because you know what happens is we consider always the aging of the material. So ceramic does not age. Ceramic is just staying like that, you know, it doesn't change color, doesn't change much, maybe a little bit of wear on the surface, of course. But the rest of the mouth is aging. So there is going to be a mismatch between the age of the patient and the age of the veneers, because the veneers are like static, you know, nothing changes there. And the rest of the patient has changed. The lower teeth or the adjacent teeth are changed. And this is something that the composite can withstand much better, you know, because it also ages a little bit. So they kind of blend, even in the long term, they still can blend if they are maintained in a proper way. You know, patient is brushing with very aggressive toothpaste and they keep the glossy appearance. You have some little maintenance of the materials. They can last and they can still be quite decently integrated after many years. And I don't think you can see that same feeling, you know, with a very long-term ceramic, because aesthetically, it's going to be very visible.
Javi, you always mention in your courses and lectures one toothpaste you like when it comes to direct anterior composites. Can you mention them for all the listeners?
Yeah, for sure. I think all in general, I mean, you can, of course, look at the granulometry and so on, but normally they don't give you this data. But it's very simple to see that this toothpaste that become very creamy, you know, and soft, like normally for sensitive teeth, like Sensodyne and all this, you know, this kind of toothpastes are very small particle and they actually help polishing composites. So you can keep your gloss, you know, you can keep, and it's a huge difference when you consider this toothpaste. Some patients can really destroy the composites because they use so aggressive toothpaste, you know, bleaching or with a very big granulometry, very aggressive. And even today, it is even worse with the problem of this natural toothpastes, you know, that you can buy on this organic shops and, you know, and it's basically like earth, you know, it's like a kind of earth. So the particle size, you can imagine the grains are huge. So this can even wear the enamel like crazy, you know. So if you advise properly the patient and they really wash their teeth with a toothpaste that it's helping the polishing, you can keep a high gloss on your composites and not being aggressive, you know, and that is for sure helping on the prognosis of how it will look after years. That's for sure.
Machi, do you also see that composite is not that bad in the long term?
The composite is great for the long term, in my opinion, because it's, you can service it. I mean, it's possible to repair. It's repairable. So even if you have any chipping, the chippings are because of problems with the function that probably we didn't notice, and we can improve it. And we can really fix it in 5 minutes, the problem. But I would like to mention one more, talking about indications and contraindications. I would like to say that there is a huge difference, in my opinion, between upper and lower jaw. While in the upper jaw, you have indication for both direct composite and ceramics, in the lower jaw, it's a typical indication for me for a composite. Why? Because when you place a ceramic veneer in the lower jaw, in anteriors, it's impossible to fix and improve the problem of functional envelope. The functional envelope, it's impossible to solve this problem within the articulator. You always have to improve something and correct something. While you correct the composite restorations, they become more beautiful with corrections, more natural. While you correct the ceramic veneers, you destroy the layer, outer layer, which means you destroy the final beauty of the veneers. In my opinion, the composite veneers in the lower jaw with improving the function, and when the patient is chewing the articulation paper and you are controlling the functional envelope and you are changing the outer, the surface of the final layer of the composite, and you are correcting them, you're improving the beauty. And with the ceramic veneers, it's totally disaster when you are doing the corrections. So for me, the right choice for the lower jaw are the composite veneers, which is very easily correctable. This is very important for us practitioners. And I would like to say, when you say about the long-term dentistry, the lower anteriors behave really great with the in the composite material compared to the ceramic materials, where, as I said, corrections are leaving the bad aesthetics because the opaque is showing out from the corrected layer.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's really difficult to make beautiful anterior lowers with ceramics, especially with layer ceramics, and they are very delicate. So it's smaller teeth, thinner, and normally also I think that the occlusion has not only the adjustments that you can make, but also the incisal edges are much more usually under load. So the chances of issues there, chipping and all these problems that can happen in ceramics are higher. So technically it can be quite difficult. So I really think that it's definitely much easier with composite. But I think that you can also consider to do monolithic ceramics, you know, like instead of going layering, you can try some blocks, you can try some different options that can also give you some resistance and still give you a chance to correct and then polish. And then it's not, because it's not a layered block, perhaps, then it's still going to work quite decently. But I agree that a layered ceramic, if you should not touch it, because if you touch it, you are destroying it immediately. It's like there is no room for corrections, really.
But there is also one problem with the ceramic material. When you start to correct, you don't know how much and how thick ceramic it is after corrections. Maybe you correct it already, or the next time you have to correct a little bit more. And at the end, you don't really know if it's tricky or not. With the composite, you can always correct till the end.
You're right.
So I would like to say that lower ceramic, it's very tricky both for dental technician because of the shape, because of the small size, because of the thickness, and because of the function. Because lower anteriors, they touch against the palatal surface of the upper incisors, while the upper, usually they don't touch. Usually you don't prepare the palatal surface. You prepare incisal surface. But the lower, they have amazing role in the function, and you need to have a great technician, and articulators will never work out that great surface in the lower incisors, like the function can be evaluated in the real patient. So anyway, the lower incisors have to be always corrected if you want to adapt the function. Look, the orthodontics, it's so many mistakes within the functional envelope in the orthodontics. And even after the ortho treatment, the lower incisors need to be corrected. So what's about the dental technicians? They need to be corrected sometimes.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, you cannot think about the upper and lower in the same way, because that's it. I mean, the incisal edges and even the tips of the canines, they are basically the position and the area. It's more for aesthetics, but the lowers is for function, not for aesthetics. So if you start considering the lower incisal edges just for the aesthetics, it's a mistake, because the function is the important thing there. It's not that much the aesthetic, but of course the patient always demands, you know, the aesthetic improvement also in the lower. So
you agree that corrections in composites are much easier.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, maybe if you consider blocks like for example the lithium disilicate, like Lisi block, for example, I think it could be a good option there, because you can, you know, correct, you can. And it's a hard material, so it will resist a little bit better than just a pure feldspathic. Some reduced thickness, you know, in this area. So stronger block is always going to help. But yeah, it's definitely easier to to control and to change into, and the function is what it is. I mean, it's, you need to be always ready for small corrections and small things, because I mean, it's alive. It's not like something fixed, you know, and it changes and it evolves and it needs adaptation too. So that's it. I mean, I agree with Maciek 100%. I think it's really a topic that many times we just are like blinded with the beautiful aesthetics of the lower veneers, you know, with, but the reality is, we will like to see those veneers after many years, you know, because I'm not sure that they are going to perform that well on the long term, right? This is the reality. I think that it will give you much more issues than the uppers in general. So,
actually, I personally never done a ceramic veneer, but I think two times I had patients who lost lower jaw ceramic veneers, and I have had to redo them in composite. So it's always kind of fun.
Maybe you are the right person, and maybe you are the dentist on the future. Because in my opinion, for the future, there is one trend toward the direct dentistry. Yes. I'm completely convinced about that, because if you are, George, doing the direct anteriors only by yourself, you are not dependent on dental technician. You are dependent on your errors and your education and your knowledge. And you are limiting the number of the errors to the minimum. So probably this is the right way.
Yeah. But one question came to my mind when Javier talked about there are specialists for aesthetics. For example, in Germany, I wouldn't say any dentist would refer someone for aesthetic direct composite. Maybe some orthodontics who are not working in the general dentistry field might refer someone to someone, but I wouldn't, I mean, maybe in Spain it's different, but in Germany it's completely not possible that ever was, I wouldn't say ever, but that someone is referring direct anterior composite to a specialist.
Well, it should. And I think that in the future you might be seeing changes on this, right? Because I think it's pretty much needed. I mean, if there is a patient coming that needs an implant, what are you going to say? I mean, I just refer to my specialist, you know, because I want to place an implant. So if I have to do an endo, it's more towards this direction. Everybody is specializing more and more in different areas, right? And I think that it's a problem of considering probably composite like a lower therapy, like a lower thing. And I think that's a mistake, because the composite is, as Maciek says, this is the future of dentistry. It's the first treatment that the patient will have. And in many cases, I'll tell you, in many cases will be the last treatment that the patient will have, because the oral health is improving a lot in globally. And we have less and less and less patients that need more and more complex and aggressive treatments. And unfortunately, a lot of the treatments that we need to do are a consequence of over-treatments in the past. So I really think that the future is mainly non-touching. And also the demand of the patient is, I don't want to touch my teeth. I mean, they are learning. They are realizing that, of course, when you touch the teeth, everything starts to break down a little bit, you know, and people is really already more aware of these problems and the long-term issues that you may run into. Of course, the aesthetics sometimes are overriding everything, like people is just thinking about having their white teeth in place, and then they cannot think about anything else, no matter what they do. Just put me white teeth. Of course, we have patients like this too, but in general, I will say that the global conscience of the people to be more aware about their personal health, to be more, take care more of their health, and that includes also teeth, you know. I think that's a trend that it's never going to go back. I think people is never going to return to, okay, do whatever you want. If you want to prep my teeth, prep my teeth. No, there is no turning back on this. That's it. I mean, we are getting there slowly and maybe faster in some countries than others, but that's the future. So the future of dentistry is doing a lot of direct, I'm pretty sure. And the improvement on the adhesive systems, on the strategies, on the materials is so good that I think that it's a bright future for these techniques, you know. So I see, of course, that ceramic can have big, it can be very helpful in many situations. But I see that the overall composite is going to win more and more and more space into the daily dentistry in the world.
Actually, I kind of was hoping that, yeah, it was in the beginning also like this in Spain, but when you market it this way, or when you kind of get a connection to your referring dentists, this helps. But I actually hope that it's the future, because I personally like the direct way a lot. But, well, I think for me, it's also part of endodontics to do the direct as well. You somehow have to know some shapes to when someone comes with a fracture that you kind of send them home with a tooth.
Yeah, I think, of course, every country has their system. And, of course, in my country, everything is private. Mm. So probably that changes things a little bit, you know. But when it's time for aesthetics, that's it. I mean, what we need to make is that difference. I mean, why, if you are doing a ceramic veneer, you have a fantastic technician behind that is going to make a beautiful layering and all these steps and taking so much care on aesthetics, and you cannot do the same with composite, right? So if you cannot do it because you don't know how to do it or you don't want to do it, why not sending it to another colleague that can do it and is really a specialist on doing that? This is the point. I mean, because otherwise it's like we are considering like, okay, that's a lower treatment. Okay, I just put one monolithic shade and then I don't mind on the anterior. Okay, but maybe the patient demands more. Maybe they don't. Maybe they are happy with just one shade restoration, even if it's not perfect, but it's okay. It will be enough. And I agree that some patients will be happy with that. But we have more and more demand for aesthetics. So when you have a young patient nowadays that comes to the office with a broken tooth, I tell you, it's not going to be happy with just a single monolithic shade, you know, of composite. They will say, okay, it's okay. But they will immediately start looking at someone else to do something better with the aesthetic. So because they want a perfect match.
I mean, with the young patients today, this trauma patient was probably has the first real exposure to a dental office. Before that, it was just prophy and checkup. And after this experience, he might suddenly know what dentistry really is about.
Hmm. Absolutely.
So, Maciej, do you also see that the young patients are kind of getting more and more demanding?
Not only young patients, I think everybody is getting more demanding. It's the social media, it's, I would say, how you say, the kind of American way and American fashion is getting to Europe and everybody is looking at the teeth. People are more and more demanding. They want the teeth more and more whiter and whiter and more beautiful and bigger and brighter. And they really, they are not the same like they were coming 10 or 20 years ago to the dentist. Today they are coming better educated. They ask, what kind of ceramic are you going to put? Are you going to put lithium disilicate, or are you going to use zirconia, or are you going to use feldspathic material? Or maybe it's a different one. Or what kind of composite are you going to place? This is going to be nano-hybrid composite, or is it going to be a different one? Yeah. So they know much more than before, and everything is about social media. But talking about ceramic and composite, I would like to mention one more thing, which Javier probably mentioned a little bit, that with the composite, we are able to save the tooth structure. But also one additional thing, because there was a trend with the ceramic veneers that they were doing a ceramic veneers without preparation. I would like to say that it's a really very difficult to make non-prep ceramic veneers, because with non-prep ceramic veneers, it's a very, very easy to emphasize and to make too big emergence profile gingivally. And it's also very difficult to cement them without the rubber dam. And we can experience big problem after cementing the veneers, having them not in the right position or having them with too much emergence profile, which is not really great and predictable for the gums. While with the composite material, it's not an issue because you can always improve it. You can always correct emergence profile. You can always add the composite, or you can have less composite at the end using a profile contraangle, which is a great contraangle to correct or all composite materials gingivally. So there is a big difference between non-prep composite, direct composite restorations, direct composite veneers, which is possible to correct them anytime, 1 year later, half a year later, 10 years later. Non-prep ceramic veneers, you have to replace them simply, because if you make a mistake, it's impossible to correct them.
Yeah, exactly. Ceramic has no, there is no forgiving on ceramics. If there is an issue, it's redo. Just prep it again and send it again to the technician. So that's really, it's a big point, because indeed we are combining both things, because people want more aesthetics. They want whiter teeth, brighter, but they don't want to prep their teeth. They want aesthetics without the prepping. And indeed, I agree that no prep veneers are very, extremely difficult to be done in very good way. I mean, I know people that is doing non-prep veneers in a very, very good way with, but you need very good hands. You need a very skilled technician making the veneers. Probably you need to work. And I think for very extremely thin veneers, if you're not doing platinum foil, I think it's not going to work. So it's going to be very, very difficult. Of course, there are some techniques that try to use lithium disilicate in a very thin way and actually reducing it, you know, like this ink glue technique, or things that you can get very thin lithium disilicate too, which is more resistant and probably a bit more forgiving, but still it can break. I mean, it's very thin ceramic. It's very, very difficult and very stressful to bond, to handle. So it's a super stressful procedure, you know, because you know that at any moment, any little mistake that you do during the procedure, the veneer will break. And that's really, it's super stressful. I mean, I don't know. I've done different treatments. Of course, I haven't been involved in complex surgical treatments, so that's another dimension for me. But I think that it's probably one of the most stressful moments in dentistry is when you are bonding veneers, and especially thin veneers, because it's, you know, that any movement is, and it's broken. And then it's like, okay, now what? And if it happens with the first one, but if it happens with the last one, you know, it's like, okay, I have bonded everything and now the last one is broken. And let me tell you something. And if you never had a broken veneer, it's because you're not doing ceramic veneers. That's it. So, I mean, we all had a case where we had a fracture, we had a problem. So, and that's it. I mean, it happens. And we need to, we cannot pretend that this is a fantastic and perfect and flawless thing. Absolutely not. And I 100% agree with Magic that composite in that way, it's fantastic, because, okay, if I just made a little mistake and I need to correct it, I can always correct it. And it's fantastic for that. And now I see more and more patients after, for example, orthodontic treatment. We have a lot of these patients that need some smile improvements, right? It's not even that they want white teeth or they want, but they have problems after the ortho treatment. Maybe there is some wear on the surface. Maybe the shape is, you know, it's not perfect. maybe there is a little space there that wants you want to be close because the ortho treatment is good, but it cannot be absolutely perfect, right? So there is always some slight things. And I see a lot nowadays this issue, you know, that we need to finish the case because it, the end is not the ortho. It's like we need a little bit here, a little bit there. Maybe it's not a lot, but okay, we want to put a bit more anatomy here or there with just a little bit of enamel. And this is, for example, with Essentia, this is something I do a lot. I just take the enamel and only with enamel, just start playing a little bit, you know, adding a little bit here, there, just to improve the aesthetics without prep, without, you know, just to finalize the case, because this is what people is demanding too. So, and if you think about doing veneers or doing ceramic, yeah, it's going to be, I mean, the non-prep, as Magic said, I mean, it's only in very specific cases that you really can do no prep, because some cases, just the insertion path is totally impossible. You cannot do no prep. There are some cases, and typically when you talk about non-prep veneers, you always see this kind of cases where they have like conoid teeth or teeth that are already, they seem that they are prepped already, right? Because they are quite straight or even, you know, thinner on the incisal edge, and they are very, very easy to do without prep. But there is a big issue with a non-prep when you have a normal tooth, because on the proximal areas, you cannot really go too deep, you know. You cannot cover too much on the interproximal because there is basically no way to insert the veneer in place. And this is a huge problem and a huge limitation that the only way to overcome it is prep. Maybe it's only with discs, and sometimes it's like, no, but I only prep with disc. But yeah, but the disc is also cutting tooth, right? I mean, yes, you're not using a burr anymore. I only use disc, but still it's cutting down the enamel. So you cannot say it's a non-prep veneer because you are prepping the tooth. I mean, how much enamel are you removing with the disc? You can remove quite a lot of enamel too. So, and with composite is a real thing that it is non-prep. Non-prep means non-prep. So it is no disc, nothing. I just add enamel on top and then I'm reshaping things. But just that, you know, without the limitations of the insertion path, without all this thing. But of course, I understand that, yeah, we also need to be train and we need to try, we need to be really handling the materials, you know, and learning how to work with them properly. And this is probably the limitation about having beautiful composites. But I mean, if you learn the skills, you can do fantastic things with composite that can be maintained, that can be replaced, that can be repaired, and you can keep the patient with this for their lives, you know. Just keep evolving, keep moving, keep being something alive, not static, not completely static. I have no doubt that the composite is the future.
Since you both are also doing courses and workshop in that topic, is there a way or would you recommend some courses for them or spaces where they should really visit if they want to learn direct dentistry?
I think we are both involved in this, and you can find us in many places in different countries, I think, lecturing about and giving courses about this technique. So also about indirect too, I guess. We have a lot of people that is doing beautiful, beautiful work. And yeah, by the way, actually in December, I will be in Kempten in Germany.
Ah, nice.
Yeah, I will have a lecture and a course there for the study club in Kempten. And yeah, this is following up with another lecture and a course that they gave in Stuttgart 2020, so just before the lockdown, just before the COVID lockdown. I was there in Stuttgart. And yeah, I think that there is more and more interest for these techniques and this more advanced way of working with composite layering and achieving beautiful aesthetics with composites.
But I think a good way to find you is also to look at the GC headquarter in Leuven and to check when you are in Belgium, basically.
Yeah, definitely. I have courses scheduled in Belgium for sure with GC. Yeah, and also with the local offices of GC in the different countries. So you can always ask them, because very often I'm traveling around Europe and doing some courses with different areas. So that could be an opportunity. And besides that, we have, if you want to really run and have a course very, very soon, next month, at the end of next month, I will have a 3 days composite program in beautiful city of Barcelona. And that's also a nice opportunity to learn all about these techniques and layering. I think it's a nice experience.
3 days is quite
3 days. Yes, 3 days. It's a 3 days course in Barcelona. Sounds nice, huh?
Actually, it really sounds nice, because usually, I mean, Germany, the usual composite course is on the afternoon. It's either for anteriors, less likely about posteriors. It's kind of a pity that there aren't 2 or 3 day courses about that.
There are a lot of topics to cover. You know, if you want to really cover them properly, there is a lot of steps that you need to cover. And you cannot, I mean, what I learned is you can never think that everything is known. I mean, you sometimes you have someone coming to the course, and you might think that they know everything about bonding, everything about the steps that they need to follow, you know, and they're just coming for learning how to layer the composite. But the reality is that you also need to talk about these topics, and they are also interested, because they always take a lot of tips, a lot of things to improve. Because at the end of the day, we are placing composite, but there are a lot of steps that they're needed before the placement of the composite. And all these steps are absolutely critical on the longevity of those composites too. So I think it's a lot of information that we need to understand, that we need to learn, and having a good volume of practice during these days is also important, you know, because the first practice you do, maybe it's not going to be perfect, but then you do another one, so in 3 days, you have really time to develop, time to think about the content, and you can start discussing, asking questions, and everything becomes a more rich experience. The learning, I think it's far, far better than just spending an afternoon or one day.
What about you, Maciej?
We're running the courses usually with the patients. So all the courses we're running, we have the demo. We try to show the patient, to explain the mock-up procedure, to explain the planning, explaining the wax-up, mock-up, silicon index, and first 2 hours we spent with the demo and demonstration. And then usually we work on the models, and sometimes the courses are 1 or 2 days, sometimes more. We have also the aesthetic curriculum that consists of 18 days of courses. In this curriculum, we have direct restorations, we have video elevation with composite restorations, we have occlusion 1 and occlusion 2 courses, and we have ceramic venue courses, so quite complex course about the aesthetic dentistry, run by 5 lectures in Krakow and Rome. This is a quite complex 18 days course that lasts probably 1.5 years for the people. And during this period, they have to prepare their own work. And at the end of the story, they have to present the case and pass an exam. And they have also a kind of mentorship, one of the lecture. Running the patient and running the case, they can consult, contact, phone, and understand the way and the possibility that they can treat the patient. Yeah? So I think as Javier said, usually it's difficult to make everything in one day. So meeting the lecturer through 2-3 days, or maybe coming back for more courses, it's more complex, and it's great to show him the cases, because everybody of us has mentors in dentistry. For me, great mentor in ceramic material is Marconi Castro, my mentor from Rome. I have different mentors in composite materials, and I have my mentor in functional dentistry, who is John Coyes in Seattle. I was for 10 years, I was going there for courses to finish with an exam and to finish with a mentor exam this year. So I became finally the mentor of the Coyes Center in Seattle after 10 years of education. But I think it's a great thing to come back to your mentor and asking the questions and collecting the cases and improving your dentistry day by day, in whichever age you are. If you are 25 years old or if you are 55 years old, you should improve your dentistry always. Because if you don't educate yourself, if you don't learn, if you don't have an aim for every year, you are going back to the past, and you need to go forward to the future every day, step by step. This is the way.
That's the best closing word I could ever imagine.
This is the way. Definitely. We need to get out of our comfort zone from time to time and learn new things and learn and improve. Always keep this hungry spirit, you know, for more, for learning and for improving. That's really, really important.
It was great that you spent your Sunday night with me. Usually when the people are listening, they sometimes don't realize at which time we recorded, but it was kind of still okay time, I think.
Midnight, yeah. Almost midnight.
Almost midnight.
That's okay. That's normal. That's good time for Spain. We can have dinner now.
In Sevilla.
Yes.
Thanks for joining me and have a nice week.
You too. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, guys. Thank you.